Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is Former Area Priest Charged with Abuse by Grace Neeland. Police said a former local priest was arrested Wednesday on sexual abuse charges stemming from his time at a Dubuque parish in the 1980s. The Reverend Leo P. Riley, 68, of Port Charlotte, Florida, is being charged with 5 counts of second-degree sexual abuse, according to a press release from the Dubuque Police Department. He was arrested in Florida and is being held there awaiting extradition to Dubuque. The release states Dubuque police were contacted by the Archdiocese of Dubuque's Office for the Protection of Children in May 2023 about reports the Archdiocese had received of cold cases of alleged sexual abuse in Dubuque in the 1980s. 4 individuals alleged they were sexually abused by Riley from 1984 to 1986 while he was associate pastor of Church of the Resurrection in Dubuque. In the state of Iowa, there is no statute of limitations for criminal charges related to sexual abuse crimes committed against minors. The victims were all identified as grade school age boys, all serving as altar boys of Resurrection Parish, the release states. Dubuque Police Lieutenant Luke Bach said the department's investigation consisted of numerous interviews over several months with individuals who had information about the alleged abuse. We do not know of any additional victims at this time, but anyone with more information is encouraged to call the department, Box. Dubuque Police coordinated with Charlotte County, Florida Sheriff's Department to arrest Riley, Box said. He will make his first court appearance in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after his extradition. Riley was ordained a priest of the Dubuque Archdiocese in 1982 and served in the city of Dubuque from 1983 to 1986 before moving on to other parishes within the Archdiocese. Riley requested a move to the Diocese of Venice, Florida in 2002 and became a priest of that diocese in 2005. Officials in both Dubuque and Florida previously stated there was no known accusations against Riley at that time. The Archdiocese of Dubuque in 2023 announced 2 accusations of abuse against Riley, and Bach said additional victims were identified during the department's investigation. Deacon John Robbins, Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of Dubuque, said in a written statement that archdiocesan officials were notified of Riley's arrest Wednesday after. We pray for those who have suffered from heinous abuses by the clergy and do all that we can to bring healing in the midst of understandable outrage and hurt, Robbins wrote. The Archdiocese of Dubuque is committed to working diligently to ensure a safe environment for children and all vulnerable individuals in our churches and schools. Karen Schwartz, Director of Communications at the Diocese of Venice, said Riley had been on administrative leave since May of last year and was prohibited from making contact with any minors pending the results of the investigation. In a May 17, 2023 letter to parishioners in the Diocese of Venice, Most Reverend Frank J. DeWayne, the Bishop of Venice, wrote that Riley strenuously denied the allegations. In March 2015, a former Dubuque resident publicly accused Riley of abusing him in October 1985 when the former resident was in 4th grade and serving as an altar boy at Resurrection. In July 2015, now retired Dubuque Archbishop Michael Jackles wrote in a letter to parishioners that the best information available does not support a reasonable belief that the allegation is true. Officials on Wednesday would not confirm whether that individual was one of the 4 victims whose allegations led to criminal charges, and court documents have not yet been filed. Bach said May of 2023 marked the first time the Archdiocese had contacted the department in relation to Riley. The next story is Barnes & Noble to open May 1st in Asbury Plaza. by Grace Neeland. A national book retailer is opening its first Dubuque location next week at Asbury Plaza. Barnes & Noble will host a grand opening celebration at 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 1st, at its new store located at 2531 Northwest Arterial. The store occupies the space previously filled by Pier 1 between Famous Footwear and Five Below. Dubuque is a market that we've been wanting to bring a Barnes & Noble to for some time now, as the closest store for our readers is 70 miles away in Cedar Rapids. Simon Vodopianoff said, the company's senior manager of store planning, told the Telegraph Herald via email, "The moment the right space became available, we jumped on it." Barnes & Noble is the world's largest retail bookseller, but also sells digital media, educational products, newspapers and magazines, among other items. The Dubuque store will include those offerings, as well as toys, games, and various gifts. The Asbury Plaza store will be the 8th Barnes & Noble location in Iowa. Already, there are roughly 600 U.S. Barnes & Noble locations and an additional 50 stores, including the Dubuque location, are expected to open this year. It's always exciting to bring Barnes & Noble to communities we haven't yet to serve, Barnes & Noble CEO James Daunt said in a news release. We couldn't be more pleased with the warm welcome we've seen. We look forward to showing them this beautiful new Barnes & Noble. There will not be a cafe at the store, which the company previously attributed to the store's size and proximity to the other coffee shops. Joe Bell, director of corporate communications for Cafaro Company, which owns a majority of storefronts in Asbury Plaza, said conversations between Cafaro and Barnes & Noble went on for over a year before the bookseller selected the Dubuque site. The diversity of retailers in Asbury Plaza and the resulting foot traffic were major selling points, Bell said. He said the community's excitement has been palpable since plans for the store were announced, and Cafaro is excited to add a new offering to the plaza's growing list. Barnes & Noble comes to Asbury Plaza on the heels of the new Sierra store that opened here last year. Rally House will open a location at the plaza this summer, as well as another location at Kennedy Mall. You have a really great selection of retailers at Asbury Plaza, which makes it a great location for foot traffic and drawing people in, Bell said. The addition of Barnes & Noble can only increase that traffic, and we're looking forward to bringing that in. While Barnes & Noble is a national chain, Vodopianoff said there will still be a focus on local authors at the Dubuque store. Recommendations and displays also are curated by local booksellers employed at the store. Roughly 15 people will work at the new store, which will be open 7 days a week. Already, best-selling area author Heather Gudenkauf is slated to appear at the grand opening celebration on Wednesday. Gudenkauf will participate in the ribbon-cutting ceremony before signing copies of her new book, Everyone is Watching. The store's layout is curated and filled with a hand-picked assortment from the store team tailored to the Dubuque community, Vodopianoff said. In addition to Gudenkauf, we are continuing to fill the rest of the month's calendar and beyond with additional author discussions, signings, and story times. Barnes & Noble will be open 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Sundays. More information about the store can be found at BNDubuqueEIA on Facebook and Instagram or at barnesandnoble.com. The last story from the front page is titled, Foundation Promotes Fitness to Complement Cancer Recovery by Grace Neeland. When Dubuque resident Kate Kurt went into remission after being diagnosed with breast cancer in 2022, her first reaction was joy. Her second was bewilderment. She had taken countless medicines, complemented chemotherapy treatments, and underwent the necessary surgical procedures. She had reached remission, but she said many of the physical and psychological effects of the cancer still. We always help people through their sickness, through the diagnosis, and through all the different treatments, said Kurt, 41. At the end, you get a lot of, yay, you did it. But then there's this feeling of, okay, well, what's next? When asking herself that question, Kurt identified her physical health as one of her top priorities. The various cancer treatments had taken a toll on her body, she said, and she was looking to improve her mobility and overall strength. She asked around last summer, and a friend told her about the survivorship program at Volve Fitness in Dubuque, a prescribed exercise program dedicated to addressing the fitness needs of people during cancer treatment or those up to 3 years in remission. Kurt secured a referral to the program, and soon she will celebrate her one-year anniversary with the group. I feel so much more independent, so much stronger, and so much more positive overall, Kurt said. It's been awesome because the program meets your needs, but it also challenges you to keep going and not give up. Kurt is one of 15 people to enroll in the Survivorship Program, a referral-based exercise program individualized to participants' needs. It started in 2021 at Volve Fitness and now is the core program of the Crocus Foundation, a Dubuque-based nonprofit. The foundation hopes to soon expand the program's reach and impact by opening a new 2,000-square-foot fitness boutique at the DuPaco Voices building in the historic Millwork District. You lose a lot of control during cancer treatment, and exercise can allow you to take back some of that control, said program lead Reagan Friend. At the same time, it can really help with a person's quality of life, both during and after treatment. The space will open in early May at 1000 Jackson Street and will be used solely for Crocus Foundation programming, Friend said. The 2,000-square-foot space will include a gym and fitness area, as well as a wellness room for meditation, massage therapy, and yoga. Program participants currently meet with Friend one-on-one at Volve Fitness, which also is located in the Millwork District at 340 East 12th Street with the new space. Friend said there will be increased capacity for group workouts or other programming. The space also should allow program participants a sense of increased privacy and comfort that can be difficult to provide in the traditional gym environment, Friend added, while simultaneously bolstering connections among cancer patients and survivors. Going to the gym after treatment comes with lots of questions like, is that person looking at me? Do they know I'm a cancer survivor? And if they do, will they treat me differently? Friend said, the answer is typically no to all those questions, but having a separate space for the program offers a little more reassurance. The idea behind the foundation's efforts is exercise as medicine, said Crocus Foundation founder and Volve Fitness owner Kim David. The fitness program complements traditional treatment options, she said, and keeps people active during and after their treatment. David founded the Crocus Foundation as a partner to the fitness program to raise money to help cancer patients and survivors cover fitness-related costs during and after treatment. The nonprofit is named for David's father, J. Bruce Merriweather, who died from esophageal cancer in 2022. Merriweather was known in Dubuque for his work in the local banking and education scenes, as well as in community development and philanthropy. He frequently recited the Crocus Prayer, David said, which is a prayer promoting resilience and strength. A crocus is a flower, and it's one that comes out in early spring, David said. It grows through the cold ground when a lot of other flowers can't, and it really represents how you can go through struggle and come out beautiful and prosperous on the other side. That's a message the foundation hopes to carry to all its tri-state area participants, David said. And fundraising work continues to support that mission. Those funds are cycled back into the foundation to support program participants. For Kurt, the program has yielded both physical and psychological results, and she hopes others will find the same as the program continues to grow. Her mood has improved tremendously, she said, as has her physical strength and stamina. Soon she intends to join some of the public fitness classes at Volf, and a prospect that previously seemed far too intimidating. One of the biggest things this program has helped me with is my confidence, Kurt said. This spring, Reagan asked if I thought I was ready to kind of graduate and do more fitness activities by myself, and I said, no way. But just this week, I told her, I think I'm ready. More information about the Crocus Foundation and its programming can be found online at crocusfoundation.com. A referral from a healthcare provider is required for participation in their survivorship program to ensure the program can be individualized appropriately. Now turning to page 2, the Dubuque and Tri-State page, we have this story titled Lafayette County Judge and Community Leader Dies by Andy Piper. Dateline Darlington, Wisconsin. Lafayette County lost a longtime community leader this week after Circuit Court Judge Dwayne Jorgensen died Sunday following a battle with prostate cancer. He was 71. Jorgensen was elected to Lafayette County Circuit Court in 2015. One of his most well-known decisions involved the sale of home baked goods in Wisconsin in 2017. He ruled a ban on the sales unconstitutional. At the time, Wisconsin was one of only two states that did not allow the sale of home baked goods. Jorgensen is remembered for creating the Drug and Alcohol Court in Lafayette County to provide individuals struggling with substance abuse a chance to improve their lives. His legacy in the community, however, extends far beyond the bench. According to his obituary, Jorgensen served as a member of the Darlington School Board, Master Gardeners Association, and as a 4-H leader. As a past council member and president of Applegrove Lutheran Church, he lent his voice to the church choir for many years. Members of Jorgensen's immediate family were not available for comment for this story, but Pastor Dan Bowman of Applegrove Lutheran said when he arrived at the church 32 years ago, Jorgensen already was serving on the church board and was president of the church that his parents attended and that he had grown up in. He sang in our choir and had a great voice, Bowman said. He sang at his daughter Amy's wedding just a couple of years ago. Bowman said Jorgensen hadn't been as active at the church in recent years because of his illness and added career responsibilities. We all understood that, Bowman said. He was just that guy that you could plug in to any capacity. As a pastor, it was great because if he told you he was going to do something, you could walk away and know it was going to get done. When you lose a key player in the life of a church, you wonder, how did all these things get done all of these years? You kind of take it for granted that they are taking care of things. Jack Sauer, chairman of the Lafayette County Board of Supervisors, said he knew Jorgensen for years and supported his candidacy for circuit court judge. We are going to miss him, I know that, Sauer said. One of Jorgensen's most impactful contributions to Lafayette County was its corporate counsel for human services for 21 years. He also served as an administrative law judge for 5 years and was a member of the Lafayette County Bar Association. Jorgensen replaced retired Circuit Court Judge William Johnston, who filled in for Jorgensen as he dealt with his cancer diagnosis. Sauer said Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has the authority to appoint a circuit court judge to complete Jorgensen's term. Jorgensen was re-elected in 2021 to a second 6-year term. It might be a little difficult to replace Jorgensen in Lafayette County, Sauer said. We don't have a lot of attorneys that live around here, and the ones that we do have are pretty young. I don't know what the timeline would be, but I would guess Evers could do it swiftly. Jorgensen's visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. today at Wyata Lutheran Church, 6682 State Road 78, South Wayne, Wisconsin. A funeral service, officiated by Bowman, will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, April 26, at the church, with visitation at 10 a.m. Now turning to the news in brief column, Dubuque Arts Studio receives local grant, advances to state competition. A burgeoning Dubuque Arts Agency has been named the winner of a local business grant competition. Art for Us recently was selected as the winner of Dubuque Main Street's Open for Business competition, according to a news release. The arts agency now will advance to the statewide competition, the winner of which will receive $20,000. Art for Us is a local art gallery and creative consultancy firm and won the local $500 grant for a planned art gallery, event space, and art incubator expansion set to open at 1826 Central Avenue in partnership with Glasshouse Recording Studio. The agency has a focus on uplifting artists from marginalized backgrounds and already has scheduled art displays, poetry readings, and fashion shows across Dubuque. If selected as one of the top five entries at the state level, Art for Us leaders will pitch the project in August for state funding. Art for Us has continuously demonstrated their ability to elevate the culture across the city, Dubuque Main Street director Danielle Jacobs said in the release. In addition, Glasshouse Studios has experienced substantial growth. We are thrilled with the project proposal and their desire to grow into a larger and permanent downtown location. Authorities: man dies after rollover crash in southwest Wisconsin. Dateline, Potosi, Wisconsin. A southwest Wisconsin man died this week after a crash near Potosi. Wilbert E. Post, 93, of Potosi, died as a result of the crash, according to a news release from the Grant County Sheriff's Department. The one-vehicle crash happened at about 2:25 p.m. Tuesday along Grant County B near Potosi's West Road. Post was traveling east on Grant County B when the release states his vehicle left the roadway and traveled onto the right shoulder. Post overcorrected, crossed the pavement, and went into the left ditch where the vehicle rolled multiple times, the release states. Post was trapped inside the vehicle and extricated manually by emergency personnel, the release states. He was transported to Lancaster Municipal Airport, where a MedFlight helicopter was on site to transport him to Madison for treatment. The Sheriff's Department later was notified that Post died, the release states. Hospice of Dubuque plans annual Tree of Life service. Hospice of Dubuque will host its annual Tree of Life memorial service and lighting ceremony in late May. The event will begin at 7:30 p.m. May 21st at Washington Square, 700 Locust Street. The event will include prayers, music, readings, and a guest speaker. Attendees are asked to bring their own lawn chairs, according to a news release. The lights on the tree represent remembered local loved ones, according to the release. Those who want to secure a light for a loved one are asked to send a monetary gift with the person's name to Hospice of Dubuque, 1670 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque, Iowa, 52002, or go to hospiceofdubuque.org. Donations received by May 17th will be included in the printed program. Donations support Hospice of Dubuque's services and mission. The event will move to the Grand Opera House, 235 West 8th Street, in the event of rain. And the police column? The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported the following. Sean D. Perkins, Jr., 36, of 2952 Central Avenue, was arrested at 2:10 p.m. Tuesday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging domestic assault with strangulation and child endangerment. Craig A. Conrad, 37, of Epworth, Iowa, was arrested at 1:55 p.m. Tuesday at his residence on a charge of domestic assault with injury. The next story is titled, Road Project Will Close Part of Iowa 13 in Manchester Area, by Mike Putz, Dateline Manchester, Iowa. A construction project on Iowa 13 north of Manchester will shut down part of the highway this summer. The closure will affect the highway beginning just north of Manchester, near 191st Street, to just south of the Highway 3 turnoff west of Edgewood beginning sometime this summer. Contractor C.J. Moyna and Sons of Alcater expects to begin construction shortly after utility crews finish relocating utilities along the route. The portion of the highway is expected to be completely shut down during the construction phase, which is planned to last one construction season. Iowa 13 will get a new concrete surface, wider shoulders, new culverts on county intersections along the route, and a revamp of snow collection areas. Delaware County Secondary Roads Engineer Rafe Koopman said plans are underway to respond to additional traffic on county roads. The official detour is through Edgewood and down Highway 38 through Greeley, Koopman explained. We know locals probably won't go that far out of their way if they're coming from the north, heading to the Manchester area. Koopman said he expects increased traffic on 180th Avenue, a gravel road known locally as Old Highway 13. We anticipate a lot of traffic on that, he said. Probably our preferred method to prepare for that traffic is to put down 4 inches of new rock and then stabilize it with calcium chloride. Koopman said that stabilization plan is something he's heard of working in South Dakota and believes it can work locally. Koopman said the condition of 180th Avenue will also be dependent on the weather. I've seen where we have had some very wet months of June, he said, so even if the road is stabilized with calcium chloride, when it's wet, it gets soft and a lot of truck traffic can take the road out of shape. That may take more maintenance, and the more you blade calcium chloride, the more chance that it can dissipate. Also, the more moisture you can get to wash it out. When everything is finished, Koopman said, Highway 13 work might relieve some of the traffic pressure on county roads. Snow has always collected in some of the back slopes. I'm assuming the new design will help reduce a lot of the snow trap issues, and the highway has been rough for quite a while, he said. Now I think we see a lot of traffic that has been using our county roads because of that. So once the project is completed, there's a good chance we could see less traffic on our county roads. Koopman is asking for patience and caution during the construction. It won't just be local people on these detours, but also people traveling who are not from this area, he said. So be cautious, allow a bit more time, and be respectful of others. And more news in brief. Delaware County Nursing Home fined for improperly reporting patients' health. Dateline Delhi, Iowa. A Delaware County nursing home recently was fined after state regulators said the facility failed to properly report a patient's worsening health. Unity Point, Abbey Health Services, Penn Center Residential Care Facility in Delhi, was fined $325 after inspectors found staff failed to follow written policies when caring for a resident in fall of 2023, according to documents from the Iowa Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing. Documents state that a male resident's health declined after he tested positive for COVID-19 in September. Several days after he tested positive, the resident's oxygen levels were 85% to 87%. On October 1st, staff found that his oxygen levels ranged from 73% to 85%. Unity Point Marketing Communications Manager Sarah Carrizo said in an email that the facility is committed to ensuring a safe environment for all patients and their families. You are listening to a reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Friday, April 25th. Thursday, April 25th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Dennis P. Donovan. Dennis Patrick Donovan, 64, died on Monday, April 22nd at home in Dubuque, Iowa. To honor Dennis's life, family and friends may visit from 1:30 p.m. until 2:15 p.m. on Sunday, April 28th, 2024 at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. There will be a sharing celebration held at 2:30 p.m. At Dennis's request, no suits or ties. The family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards, which may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Attention, Dennis Donovan's family. Online condolences may be left for the family at the Bear Funeral website. Roseanne E. Chatfield. Roseanne E. Chatfield, 77, of Dubuque, passed away on April 23, 2024, at Harmony, Dubuque. Friends and family may visit from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Friday, April 26, 2024, at the Cathedral of St. Raphael. Mass of Christian burial will begin at 11 a.m. on Friday at the Cathedral with Father Dennis Quint officiating. Burial will be held at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Dubuque. Darla J. Yeager, Bellevue, Iowa. Darla J. Yeager, 83, of Bellevue, died on Sunday, April 21st, 2024. No services will be held. Funeral services. Janet R. Brewer, Cassville, Wisconsin. Visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 27th at St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church, Cassville. Mass of Christian burial, 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Mary K. Edwards, Hickory, North Carolina. Celebration of Life, 4 to 8 p.m. Saturday, April 27th. Happy's Place, 2323 Rockdale Road. Jerome J. Jager, Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. today, Holy Ghost Catholic Church. Richard Hocking, Galena, Illinois. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 27th, Furlong Funeral Chapel, Geneva. Service, 11 a.m. Saturday at the chapel. Edna M. Hauslog, Dubuque. Wake service, 3:45 p.m. Friday, April 26th, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Mass of Christian burial, 10 a.m. Saturday, April 27th, St. Joseph's Catholic Church, Key. Scott L. Kilberg, Oak Park, Illinois. Service, 11 a.m. Saturday, April 27th, Offshore Event Center, Bellevue, Iowa. Reception and gathering following services at the event center. Margaret H. Krozik, Loveland, Colorado. Services, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, April 27th, St. Raphael Cathedral. Donna M. Schmidt, Durango, Iowa. Wake service, 3:45 p.m. today, Leonard Funeral Home, Dubuque and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today at the funeral home. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 26th, Holy Ghost Catholic Church. And K. Snow, Clinton, Iowa. Visitation, 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. Friday, April 26th, Law Jones Funeral Home, Hanover, Illinois. Service, 5:30 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Now we turn to the sports page, and the headline from the top of the page is Saints Clear First Hurdle by Jim Leitner. Kevin Riedler polished off a masterful series with the second shutout, and the Dubuque Fighting Saints marched on in the USHL's Clark Cup playoffs. Riedler stopped all 17 shots he faced. Beckett Hendrickson and Lucas St. Louis scored third period goals, and the Saints defeated the defending Clark Cup champion Youngstown Phantoms 2-0 on Wednesday night in Youngstown to win the best-of-five Eastern Conference semifinal series in four games. The Eastern Conference regular season champion, Saints, advanced to the conference final for the first time since 2016 and 17, and the seventh time since returning to the USHL in 2010 and 11. The Saints will play either Muskegon or Green Bay, who meet in a decisive Game 5 on Friday. "It's the best feeling," said Riedler, who improved to 3-1 with his second shutout of the series and leads the USHL with .70 goals against average and .967 save percentage in the playoffs. "The playoffs are one of the biggest reasons we play. Everyone wants to win. You battle so hard for so many years to be in these types of situations. This series gives me a lot of confidence moving on, and I'll do my best to continue it. We battled really hard to finally score, and everyone did a good job in the defensive zone all game. It was a hard game for everyone, but we won because we prepared for these kinds of situations." Hendrickson broke a scoreless tie at 4 minutes and 59 seconds of the third period after prolonged pressure by the Saints in the Youngstown zone. The Phantoms had a chance to clear, but Jurek Pekarek forced a turnover at the blue line for an Eric Paulson re-entry. Paulson took a shot from a light angle, and the rebound made its way to Matthew Desidiero at the left point. Desidiero swept the puck to Pekarek for a one-timer for the center of the blue line. Aiden Wright made the initial save, but Hendrickson backhanded the puck past the prone goaltender for his second goal of the series. It's not that we weren't bought in, but we weren't getting to the blue paint as much as we should have the first two rounds, Hendrickson said. In the locker room, we all talked about how much we wanted this one. We started going to the net a lot more, and we were rewarded for it. They're a good team, but this shows how good we are, too. Losing game one was probably good for us because the last three games, everyone was completely bought in. We won in three different ways, too, which it says a lot about us as a team. Youngstown's sense of urgency significantly increased after that goal, but instead the Saints doubled the lead at the 11:04 mark on St. Louis's second goal, and the series St. Louis's initial shot from the left point hit traffic in front, but Jake Sondrial tracked down the rebound below the goal line and moved the puck to Luke Malbeuf at the right point. Malbeuf returned the puck to St. Louis at the left point for a one-timer. St. Louis's shot eluded a screen by teammate James Reeder and hit Phantoms defenseman Luke Osborne in the shoulder before finding its way past Wright. It probably sealed the deal, and it definitely gave us confidence to shut them down from there on out, St. Louis said. We just had to make sure we played the right way and didn't beat ourselves. We talked a lot about getting pucks to the net. I saw a lane and took the shot. All I needed was a good bounce, and I got it. Youngstown coach Ryan Ward pulled Wright for a sixth attacker with 2 minutes and 16 seconds remaining in regulation, but Riedler stood tall. In Game 3, Youngstown's Mikey Burchill forced overtime with a goal to make it 1-1 with 1 minute and 42 seconds remaining in regulation. The series win meant even more to Malbeuf, who grew up 90 minutes away in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, and learned of the USHL by attending Phantoms games. It's a super cool moment to be able to do this in front of all my family and friends, he said. I'm so glad they were able to come see us do this. I always dreamed of playing at this level, so to win this series here is like a full circle moment for me. Dubuque controlled the day in a scoreless first period and finished with a 9-5 advantage in shots on goal. The Saints landed the first power play at 7 minutes and 3 seconds with Zach Morin giving Riedler a snow shower and received a roughing penalty, but they did not score despite a few quality looks. Riedler denied Brecken Smith from in tight midway through the first, but Wright responded with a big save a few minutes later when Pisarek led Paulson for a chance off the rush. Wright also denied Pisarek on a grade A chance minutes into the second frame. Youngstown received its first power play at 4 minutes and 5 seconds into the second period when Colin Frank slashed Phantoms captain Andrew Struthman. The Phantoms did not manage a shot on the power play, and Dubuque's penalty kill improved to 7-for-7 in the series. Riedler then kept the game scoreless with 3 highlight reel saves. He denied Nathan Lewis on the back door at 8 minutes and 6 seconds, Kuzma Voronin in all alone at 10 minutes and 37 seconds, and Charlie Serrato on a shot off the rush at 14 minutes and 48 seconds. Wright denied James Reeder on a breakaway at 15 minutes with 2 Phantoms defenders hustling back to pressure Reeder. Dubuque finished with a 9-4 advantage in second period shots. Between the regular season and playoffs, Dubuque went 4-0 at Covelli Center, where the Phantoms posted the second best home record this season. Now we go to Boys Prep Tennis and Dubuque Wallert, and the title of the story is Wallert's Lucy Reaches Milestone Win by Danny Miller. What started as an unspecified journey as a volunteer helper in 2015 has morphed into a milestone for Wallert boys tennis coach Eric Lucy. Tuesday's 7-2 victory over Cedar Rapids Prairie secured win number 100 for Lucy, the ninth-year Golden Eagles leader. His overall mark improved to 134 since taking over in 2016. "Every year has something special about it," Lucy said. "Every year I just get excited about the guys that come back, and then the new relationships formed for the new freshmen or sophomores coming in. I never thought I'd still be coaching, but the times with these guys are absolutely priceless." He'll be the first to admit, though, this milestone doesn't belong to just him. After serving as a volunteer helper in 2015, Lucy took the reins in 2016 and won a state title alongside co-head coach Julie Westerkamp. The pair added another state championship in 2018. When Westerkamp, who succumbed to cancer in 2020, was first diagnosed in 2017, Amy Walsh joined the coaching staff and has remained a constant ever since. "This 100th victory is really shared with Julie Westerkamp and Amy Walsh," Lucy said. "People come up to me and say, 'Gosh, you're having a really good season. You're doing such a good job coaching.' I just laugh and tell them that I drive the van. They couldn't do it without me." Roan Martineau, who plays number one singles and doubles for Wallert, said Lucy's mastery is in the culture he creates. "Everyone loves to play on the team because of the environment he creates," Martineau said. He also gives excellent words of wisdom on character and integrity, which is a rare trait with a lot of coaches. "He is very player-oriented and wants to make sure we feel comfortable with our own games. He doesn't care if you miss a ball. He doesn't care if you lose a match. He just cares about the character and integrity that you have off the court and on the court." Wins are, of course, nice too, and since taking over, Lucy has had plenty. Aside from the titles in 2016 and 18, Wallert has claimed bronze the last three seasons in the Class 1A state tournament. This year's team is currently 7-0, highlighted by wins over longtime foes Cedar Rapids Xavier and Iowa City West. Wallert opened the season with a 5-4 victory over Xavier, winners of the last four Class 1A team titles, and a team that hadn't beaten since 2018. Prior to last week's 5-4 win over 2A Iowa City West, which holds an Iowa best 11 state titles, the Golden Eagles had been shut out in every matchup with the Trojans since 2016. "I did think that this year we could have one or two guys win their match against Iowa City West, but I had no illusions that we were going to win," Lucy admitted. "Our guys have just done such a great job in these tight third set tiebreakers. They are just so battle tested." Martineau, a senior, hopes to continue this special run as he closes his career and his coach nears the end of his. "Personally, for me, it means a lot because this is my senior year. But for Coach Lucy, it's incredible that we are having this kind of year during a season when he got 100 wins," Martineau said. "This is a pretty big year for him since he's kind of at the end of his coaching career." Lucy faults his players for continually extending his one-year contract. "Every year I tell myself this is my last season, and then I got reattached to these guys, and we have so much fun together," he said. "We have had so many laughs and so many memories. I will cherish all the players, past and present." Now we have the Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, and it is Luke Harwick from Beckman Catholic. The title of the story is "Harwick Hopes to Finish Prep Career with a Flourish," by Shannon Mum. For as long as he can remember, Luke Harwick has lived and breathed the game of golf. The Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week continues to rewrite the record books at Dyersville Beckman Catholic during his senior season and has big goals for the rest of his high school career. Harwick shot a 66 during an 18-hole round at the Blazer Invitational in Dyersville Golf and Country Club last week. That score put Luke in first place by 9 strokes and led Beckman to a first-place finish at the Invitational with a score of 299. His 66 is also the lowest 18-hole score in the state this season and sets a new school record. The leaps Luke has made from last year to this year are just phenomenal, Beckman coach Jared Kneeper said. Golf is all this guy thinks about. He's making 18 holes a day, every day, and I continue to be blown away by some of the shots he is able to make. On Monday night, Harvick shot a 33 against Bellevue to tie the school record he previously set for 9 holes. Last week's 66 really helped my confidence, Harvick said. I know I just have to go out and play my own game every time I step on the course. Harvick has grown up on the golf course after his dad introduced him to the sport at a very early age. I fell in love with it right away, he said, even more so when I started to see the progress I was making. Harvick transferred from Clayton Ridge High School his freshman year and has been playing on the varsity at Beckman since his sophomore season. That year, he took home state runner-up honors. Last season, he placed fourth at the state meet and then won the prestigious Iowa Junior PGA Player of the Year award last summer. My goal this year is definitely to win the whole thing at state and get the job done, he said. I got a good glimpse of the last 2 years and I'm still hungry. Added Kneeper, Luke is very motivated to get back to state and his work ethic is so strong. He's putting in the time every single day, even if he's with the golf simulator at the school during study hall. He also has turned into a really great leader along with our other seniors. He's such a humble kid. Harvick will continue his golf career next year at the University of Dubuque. I just want to continue getting better, Harvick said. Added Kneeper, Luke's been a really important part of our team, and he's a great kid off the course. He's easy to root for. I know he will excel at the collegiate level because of the kind of work ethic he has and the type of kid he is. Now we'll have the On the Air Today column. In Major League Baseball, the Brewers at the Pirates at 11:35 a.m. on BSWI and on the radio, WPVL AM 1590. White Sox at the Twins at 12:10 p.m. NBCSCHI and on the radio, WMVP AM 1000. And the Astros at the Cubs at 1:10 p.m. On TV at MARQ and on the radio, WDBQ AM 1490. In soccer, Premier League, Brighton versus Manchester City, 2 p.m. on USA Channel on TV. In golf, the PGA Tour, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans at 2:30 p.m. on the Golf Channel. LPGA, JM Eagle LA Championship, 5:30 p.m. on the Golf Channel. And DP World Tour ISPS Handa Championship at 10 p.m. on the Golf Channel. In NHL playoff hockey, the Panthers at the Lightning at 6 p.m. on TBS. Hurricanes at the Islanders at 6:30 p.m. on ESPN2. The NBA playoff basketball, Knicks at the 76ers, 6:30 p.m. on TNT, and also True TV. Nuggets at the Lakers at 9 p.m. on TNT and True TV. And NFL football, the 2024 NFL Draft first round from Detroit at 7 p.m. on ESPN. Now we'll turn to men's college volleyball, NCAA Division III tournament. The title of the story is Familiar Foes Meet at Loras for Final Four by Jim Leitner. It shouldn't take long for the participants in the NCAA Division III Men's Volleyball Final Four to introduce themselves this weekend at Loras College's Lillis Athletics and Wellness Center. New York University and Vassar College have both played all of the other teams in the field at least once during the regular season, while California Lutheran and Stevens Institute of Technology each played two of the other three teams in the field. All four teams were represented on the American Volleyball Coaches Association All-American teams, too, with Cal Lutheran and Stevens landing three selections, NYU 2 and Vassar 1. Stevens squares off against Cal Lutheran at 5 p.m. Friday in the first semifinal, and Vassar meets conference rival NYU in the second semifinal at 7:30 p.m. The championship match is scheduled for 2 p.m. Saturday. Here's a capsule look at the four teams headed to Lillis Court for the Final Four this weekend. California Lutheran Kingsmen. Location, Thousand Oaks, California. Coach, Kevin Judge in his ninth season. Record, 24-5. NCAA ranking number 4. Conference, independent. How they got here. The Kingsmen received an at-large berth as one of the top independent programs in the country. They swept Dominican 3-0 in the first round of the NCAA tournament, then survived a rally by site host Loras to win 3-2 in the Elite Eight. Against the field, beat Vassar 3-1 on January 13th, beat NYU 3-1 on January 20th. Trending, Cal Lutheran has won 6 matches in a row. Its longest winning streak of the season is 8 matches. 11 of its matches have come against ranked foes, including a 3-0 loss to then number 14 Loras at Aurora, Illinois. The Kingsmen also beat Dominican 3-2 earlier in the season. All-Americans, Taylor Marks, Jordan Cooper, and Michael Stahl. Statistical leaders, kills, Cooper, 363, Stahl, 325, Ben Weber, 220, Boris Horiak, 167. Assists, Taylor Marks, 1,052, Logan Marks, 60. Aces, Cooper, 45, Taylor Marks, 32, Stahl, 28, Horiak, 20, Diggs, Logan Marks, 216, Taylor Marks, 213, Stahl, 189, Blocks, Horiak, 75, Cooper, 51, Stahl, 48, and Taylor Marks, 40. The New York University Violets. Location, New York City. Coach, Jose Pena, 31st season. Record, 20-7. NCAA ranking, number 7. Conference, United Volleyball Conference. How they got here. The Violets defeated Vassar 3-1 in the conference championship match to earn an automatic bid. They swept Baruch 3-0 in the first round of the NCAA tournament, then edged Southern Virginia University 3-2 in Lexington, Virginia, in the Elite Eight round. Against the field, lost to Cal Lutheran 3-1 on January 13th, beat NYU 3-0 on February 21st, lost to Stevens 3-0 on March 30th, lost to NYU 3-1 on April 14th. Trending, NYU has won 10 consecutive matches for its longest winning streak of the season. All-Americans, Rye Kagan, Zach Knudsen. Statistical leaders, kills, Lucas Osiecki, 269, Luke Boyer, 259, Kagan, 237, Emerson Evans, 209, Buddy Cohen, 132. Assists, Devin Nugent, 869, Sashin Dasari, 147. Aces, Osiecki, 33, Boyer, 26, Evans, 24, Matthew Warder, 24, Diggs, Knudsen, 243, Osiecki, 166, Boyer, 147, Nugent, 140, and Blocks, Kagan, 109, Cohen, 100, Evans, 63. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Alrighty.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.